Just go right into the teaching then, huh? Devar Torah. The book of Devarim is a collection of four speeches that Moses gave to the people of Israel during the last 5 weeks of his life. The introductory speech is in chapters 1 and 4, and the main speech is in chapters 5 through 26, and the admonition speech in 27 and 28, and the repentance, the teshuvah, is in 29 and 30. But in chapter 1, verse 6 through chapter 3, verse 29, Moses reminds Israel why they spent 40 years in the desert, and he exhorts them through various allusions to fulfill their calling of possessing the promised land. His main purpose was to show them that there was no reason that they could not and should not take the land. If they were willing to follow God's Torah, they would be able to do what their forefathers could not. Now, in chapter 4, verse 1, Moses begins to introduce the topic of his main speech. And so we need to know why the book of Devarim is critical to understanding the purpose and the scope of the Torah. Devarim 1:5 says, Moses began explaining the Torah, the law, saying, and the reason why the book of Devarim is so critical to understanding the purpose and scope of Torah is because Moses explicitly stated that he would explain it there. In other words, he's going to help us understand the Torah. He will tell us the who, the what, the where, the when, and the why, and the how of the Torah. Therefore, we should expect the book of Devarim to be a gold mine of treasures pertaining to the Torah. So let me give you some terms first, define them. There's some very important words that are used throughout Devarim that we have to know, and the first word is Torah. What does it mean? Literally, it means teaching, instruction, or doctrine. That is its meaning. The Torah may mean the law, as in the first five books of Moses. The Torah may also mean the entirety of the Tanakh, or the entirety of the whole Bible, Genesis through Revelation. Sometimes Torah means procedure. For example, in Leviticus 6:9, Torah means procedure, as in the procedure, the Torah of the burnt offering. Now, Deuteronomy 4:1, now, O Israel, listen to the statutes and the judgments which I teach to you to observe that you may live and go in and possess the land which the Lord your God, your Father, is giving you. So let's look at those words, statutes and judgments, okay? Although we glance over these words in English as if their meanings are the same, they are very precise, and in Hebrew they have different meanings. The word statutes in Hebrew is chukim, C-H-U-K-I-M, statutes, chukim. The singular of that word is chok. One statute is a chok. Some versions of the Bible translate this word as statutes or decrees. What are chukim? Chukim are laws from the Holy One that are constant and they never change. The word ordinances is actually derived from the Hebrew word chok. These verses capture the true essence of chukim in Jeremiah 31, 35, and 36. Chukim are statutes that will never pass away. They are constant and as predictable as the laws of nature, governing the movement of the heavenly bodies. Did you know that the holy days, the Moedim, are referred to as chukim in Leviticus chapter 23? Now that you know the scriptural definition of a chok, if someone said to you the biblical holy days were only valid until the death and resurrection of Yeshua, what would your response be? A bunch of hokey. The Moedim are instructions defined in the Torah as chukim, which are statutes that will never pass away. How long is never? Till Jesus comes. No. The word judgments is translated from the Hebrew word mishpatim. Mishpatim. Some Bible verses translate this word as judgments, ordinances, or laws. A judgment in the singular is a mishpat, right? It's a decision, a judgment that must be made between two claims. Judgments, or mishpatim, were first introduced in the Torah in Exodus 21. We'll return to that later. The word commandments is translated from the Hebrew word mitzvot. Mitzvot. The singular word for mitzvot is what? Mitzvah, right. As you read the Torah portion, there are three words. These three words are mentioned numerous times throughout it. And they're the most important words in the book, and so we'll have to see why. So in 4:1, Moses is admonishing the people to listen to the statutes, the chukim, the judgments, the mishpatim he's about to give them. Why do they need to do that? In chapter 4, verse 5, Moses has said he'd already taught them the statutes and the judgments so that they would have life and possess the land. So, and Moses said the people were to perform the commandments he'd already taught them so they could have life. Now, let's ask the obvious question. Why does he tell them to listen to them again? Secondly, when did he teach them these statutes the first time? Okay, in chapter 4, verses 10 through 14, Moses recounts the Torah, the giving of the Torah, when the Holy One spoke his words to the people. Notice in chapter 4, verse 14, how Moses states that Adonai commanded him at that time, at the giving of the Torah, to teach Am Yisrael statutes, chukim, and judgments, mishpatim. Also notice how Moses stated that they were to be performed in the land, just as stated in Deuteronomy 4:1, that he was about to give them these statutes and judgments to perform in the land. Therefore, we should conclude that the statutes and judgments Moses wants the people to listen to are the same ones he originally gave them, guess where? Back in Exodus, at the Matan Torah, the giving of the law, or the Torah. So, Moses digresses from the main story of the Torah. How many times he refers to statutes and judgments in this portion? There's a whole bunch. But note how he picks up the story of the Matan Torah again in Deuteronomy 5:1. Here he recounts the giving of the Ten Commandments. As we go through these commandments, you pay very close attention to chapter 5, verses 30 and 31. Why were they told to return to their tents in Deuteronomy 5:30? While Adonai continued to give revelation to Moses, they thought they would die if they heard any more words directly from God. Therefore, they asked that Moses receive the remaining words of the covenant so they could relay them, so that he could relay them to Am Yisrael. The people thought they were going to die listening to God. So now there's a new plan. Adonai was going to speak the entire covenant directly to the people. However, they were afraid. So he will now tell Moses the remaining words of the covenant, and Moses will now relay them to Am Yisrael. In verse 31, it says, as for you, stand here with me, and I shall speak to you the entire commandment and the decrees, the statutes, and the ordinances, the mishpatim, the judgments, that you shall teach them, and you shall perform them in the land that I gave them to possess it. So what is God about to speak to Moses? He's about to speak again the chukim and the mishpatim. What is Moses supposed to do with these things? Teach them to the people. Remember, had Am Yisrael not grown fearful, God would have spoken the words directly to them. When did Moses teach these things? Well, they were taught in Exodus chapter 21, verse 1 through chapter 24, verse 18, right after the giving of the Ten Commandments in chapter 20. Now these are the judgments which you shall perform. You shall set before them. These judgments were given after the Ten Commandments were given. These were all a bunch of rules there. Many statutes and judgments were taught in a lot of our Torah portions that we've already covered. They're all through the Torah. Leviticus 18:5 says, you shall observe my statutes, my chukim, and my judgments, my mishpatim, which man shall carry out, and by which he shall live. I am God. And 18:26, but you shall safeguard my statutes and my judgments and cannot commit any of these abominations. Leviticus 20:22 says, you shall observe all my statutes, my chukim, and my mishpatim, and perform them. Now we see when the statutes, the chukim, and the judgments, the mishpatim, were originally given. They were given directly to Moses right after the Ten Commandments. They were given at that time because Am Yisrael had not sinned with the golden calf yet. They would have marched straight to Canaan to possess the land had they not done that golden calf thing. Remember how often Moses stressed that these commandments, these mitzvot, were supposed to be performed in the promised land. Am Yisrael is now at the point they were some 40 years ago. They were poised to enter the land. Therefore, Moses is reviewing the statutes, the chukim, and the judgments, the mishpatim, originally given at Mount Sinai, that they must perform where? In the land. This explains why Moses told Israel to listen to them and that he'd already given it to them. So his main speech begins in chapter 5, verse 1. We know this because 4:41 is in the third person singular, and whereas 5:1 switches to the first person singular. So it's a switch to another speech mode. And once again, Moses is zeroing in on his main topic for his speech. He wants to talk to them about three things: the commandment, note that it is in the singular, the statutes, the chukim, and the judgments, the mishpatim. Deuteronomy 6:1 is like an introductory remark to all this. It is as if he's giving us the general outline of what he intends to say. This mark continues until Deuteronomy 6:3. Then he begins with his first main topic, which is a particular commandment called the Shema. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is Echad. 1. Remember, Moses stated that this main topic would concern three subjects: the commandment, the decrees, the statutes, and the ordinances, the judgments. So let's see how they form the outline. What is the commandment? It is the Shema. It is followed by the greatest commandment, to love the Lord your God with all of your heart, right? So it's none other than that. Love God with all your heart. That is the greatest commandment there is. This is an appropriate beginning of his speech. And let's see where we close out this speech. It closes out in Deuteronomy 11:22 through 25. And this portion of the speech begins with the commandment, which was none other than the commandment to love God, and it ends here, the footer. According to Moses' outline in Deuteronomy 6:1, we should now talk about chukim and mishpatim. And so that starts in chapter 12, verse 1. So it goes on. And then that concludes in Deuteronomy 26:16 through 19. Okay? So, what is the purpose of the Torah? Okay, let's see what we can think of. Throughout the remainder of this last book of the Torah, a fundamental issue is of primary importance in these last days, and it's many voices have gone out over the centuries concerning the purpose of the Torah. Most of these voices echo the same erroneous views over and over and over again. Just when you think you heard it all, a new view of the Torah pops up. Believe me, I hear it all, and then I get one that I ain't heard. The reason so many non-Jewish believers don't understand the Torah is because they don't study it seriously. Do you study the Torah? Many believers today think they understand the Old Testament. I understand it. They think they know why the law was given. But in reality, they don't, because they don't study it from the proper sources. And the information they are fed from their leaders is often quite wrong. Not me. I try to give you the right stuff. But I'm not all your leaders. A lot of you have different leaders. A lot of you don't listen to what I say. You do things on your own. Hopefully, we'll eventually discover answers to the following questions. To whom was the Torah given? What is the fundamental purpose or function of the Torah? When is the Torah a valid form of expression for faith and practice? And where is the Torah applicable? So, a few of the commandments may look like this. Thou shalt stop working. I'm going to give you a new Torah. Okay? Series of commandments, and I hope you help you enjoy the beauty of a rainbow. I want you to enjoy this. I'm going to give you some commandments. You shall stop working whenever it rains. You shall look out of the window, or thou shall look out of the window to see if the sun breaks through the clouds near the end of a period of rain. Thou shalt search the skies, north, south, that's east, and west, looking for a rainbow. Thou shalt enjoy the sight of a rainbow, etc., etc. Now suppose I gave you this overall commandment. Obey all of my commandments so that you can enjoy the beauty of the rainbow. One of the easiest questions to answer is this. Why should someone obey my commandments? That's right. It's so obvious anyone can understand. Now if I were to ask you what is the fundamental purpose, function of my commandments, you would have to say to see the beauty of a rainbow. Right? Okay. We'll use that same strategy to understand the Torah now. First, we'll determine why Israel was commanded to obey the Torah. They will simply conclude what the fundamental purpose is equivalent to the reason why God commanded Israel to obey it. Why should there be any other primary function of the Torah other than that the intended purpose realized by those who follow it? So in Chapters 4, 1 through 4, note the familiar phrase, statutes and judgments. Why does Moses state he's giving them statutes and judgments? Hint, note the important phrase. There's an important phrase in that verse. So that you may. So that you may what? Here's the fundamental purpose of the Torah, the function of the Torah. The verse informs us why Moses gave them the Torah. So that you may live. Therefore, obedience to Torah is a matter of physical life and death. You want to live? Follow the Torah. It's so important, Moses tells them in Deuteronomy 4:2, that they are not to add or take away from the Torah. 4:2. Moses is now going to give them an object lesson in verses 3 and 4. An object lesson is going to teach the hearers something. Moses gives them the example of Baal Peor, stating that those who clung to God are alive, whereas those who followed Baal Peor are destroyed. To prove to them that those who obey the Torah receive life. I don't think it can get any simpler than that. First, Moses gives the fundamental purpose of the Torah to provide life to those who obey it. Then, because of this very important matter, a matter of life and death, he states that the commandments of the Torah cannot be changed in any way, added to or taken away. Then he gives a real-life example of those who obeyed Torah in a particular incident and they received life, whereas those who didn't obey the Torah were destroyed. So in chapter 5, verse 31, Moses stated he was giving Am Yisrael the entire commandment, statutes, and judgments. They are given so that Am Yisrael could possess the land. Let me ask you a question. Can you possess the land if you're dead? No, it's a little piece of it. Of course not. This is just another way of saying I'm giving you the Torah so that you'll be able to possess or live on that piece of earth. And in 5:33, why should Israel walk in the way of God's commandments? So that they will live long and so that it will go well with them. It says that. Now in chapter 6, verses 1 and 2, Moses is about to actually give them the commandment, the statutes, and the judgments. How is this related to 1:5? Deuteronomy 1:5 says, Moses began explaining, teaching this Torah. In 6:1, Moses states that the Holy One commanded him to teach Israel the commandments, the statutes, and judgments. So, should this surprise us? No. In chapter 6, verses 17 and 19, why must they keep the commandments and judgments? The purpose in those two verses is so that they will prolong their days, i.e. they will live a long life in the land of Israel. So, and in 24 and 25 of chapter 6, the purpose of the Torah is through obedience to his commandments, Am Yisrael will have something we call life. Some say that Devarim 6:25 teaches righteousness through the keeping of the Torah. That's not what the Chumash says. It says life. In summary, we've seen that that Adonai told Israel the reason why they should obey the Torah. The primary reason was that they would have life and possess the land. Since God gave Israel the Torah, we should easily conclude that its purpose or function was to be a source of life. Right? For those who obeyed it, it was given as a gift from the Holy One to the people he chose and who he loved. It's as simple as that. The Torah's primary purpose or function is to be a source of blessing, life, reward, goodness, etc. Moses has been and will continue to be very forthright and explicit in explaining why they should obey the Torah. It has nothing to do with keeping them in right standing with God. Don't have to do that. At the literal or pashat level, this plain or simple meaning of the interpretation, it's a matter of physical life or death. You want to live or you want to die. It's a source of blessing. After studying these passages, can anyone honestly interpret the Torah was given to Israel as a source of bondage? Well, that's what they teach. I think not. Did he ever give them statutes and judgments to save them? Did he ever say that these statutes and judgments that they would have would keep them in bondage? You ever read that in the Torah? No. Did he ever say he gave them these judgments and statutes to save them? Did he ever say that he gave these statutes and judgments so that they would see how utterly sinful they were? No. Did he ever say he gave them these statutes and judgments so that they would see that they could never keep his laws? No, 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 they never got it that way. He gave Yisrael the Torah so that they would experience physical life, especially in the land of Israel. As we continue through the book of Devarim, you will be simply shocked at how often Moses tries to get Israel to understand this fundamental purpose or function of the Torah. More importantly, you'll be shocked that so many believers today don't understand this simple concept. Once you fully understand the fundamental purpose or function of the Torah, then you will realize why statements like the following are stupid or erroneous. Let's just say erroneous. The Torah is bondage. The Torah was done away with after Yeshua's death and resurrection. The Torah is only for the Jews. The Jews were saved by keeping what? The Torah. The Torah is temporary. The Torah was given to the Jews to curse them. The Torah was abolished. The Torah was nailed to the cross. We need only to obey the spirit of the Torah. The letter of the Torah has been done away with. The Torah brought death to those who obeyed it. We are one, free from, two, dead to, and three, delivered from the Torah as a standard of right behavior. Obeying the Torah is called legalism. Yeshua fulfilled the Torah, therefore it's no longer necessary for us to obey it. On and on and on and on and on and on and on. We go. And furthermore, you'll be able to add your hearty amen to everything David said about the Torah if you read Psalm 119. Okay. So what does Deuteronomy 4, 25 and 27 teach us that the primary function of the Torah is to give life to those who obey it? We've already seen that, right? That's exactly what it teaches. There are many voices in the world today that say the Torah was abolished or done away with, abrogated after Yeshua died. Is this true? What time period is Moses talking about in his prophecy? He's talking about in Deuteronomy 4, 27 through 30, guess what? The last days. When are the last days? Before they entered Israel? No. Now. In fact, he's specifically talking about the day you and I live in right now. Yeah, pertaining to the location of Am Yisrael in this world, what is one of the main characteristics of the last days? According to Deuteronomy 4:27, Am Yisrael will be scattered into all of the nations. Is that true? Wow, the Bible is actually true in parts. It's in parts. When did the last days begin? According to Hebrews 1:1, the last days began when Yeshua began his ministry. Was that last week? 2,000 years ago. 40 years after his resurrection, the complete scattering of Am Yisrael into the nations began as the house of Judah was sent into exile by the Romans. The northern kingdom had already been scattered in 722 BC. The full scattering of the nation of Israel was completed in 135 of our common era by Hadrian. And Am Yisrael did not exist as a nation in the land for another 2,000 years until the year 1948. Therefore, we're obviously in the last days now, I would think. According to Deuteronomy 4:30, in the last days, Israel will return to God and listen and obey his voice. How about that? Aren't you excited? What does the Torah teach that the expression listen to, obey the commandments of Torah, obey his voice mean? Obey his voice is a Hebrew idiom meaning obey the commandments of the Torah. With this understanding, Moses was clearly stating that in the last days, specifically now, today, Israel, all 12 tribes, would turn from their transgressions, i.e. breaking Torah, and begin to obey the Torah of Moses. For to obey his voice means to obey the Torah. Now Moses was clearly a picture of Yeshua. Moses, realizing he would soon die, taught Israel the most important thing that he could do was to what they could do was to love God with all of their heart. How is this related to Yeshua before his death? Before his death, Yeshua taught his Talmudim that they were to love him. In fact, can you tell me at least two ways John chapter 14 and 15 is clearly related to this portion? Well, John 14 and 15 are a speech that Yeshua gave before his departure and records how he primarily talked about two subjects, love for him and obedience to the Torah. This is clearly related to Moses' message of love for Adonai and obedience to the commandments. Okay. So, Moses also began to prophesy concerning events of the last days. How is this related to when Yeshua was killed and resurrected? Luke 21 and Matthew 24. Yeshua spent a lot of time talking about the last days before he was killed, didn't he? In Isaiah 40, verses 9 through 11, do you know what these verses prophesy? They prophesy the second coming of our Messiah. Yeah. And if you compare that with Revelation 19, 11 and 16 and 22, 12, you'll see that both of those books involved the coming of the Lord to the earth, the Lord ruling and reigning, and both mentioned that his reward is with him. Furthermore, we know that Yeshua is the good shepherd who will fulfill the role spoken of by Isaiah in chapter 40, verse 11. So, notice when Moses makes these speeches that he made. They're all done before they enter the land. This is a prophetic pattern for the beginning of the millennial kingdom. You can make analogies concerning the exodus from Egypt and the exodus of the last generation into the land. It's like the final exodus and the exodus. We're both going into the land led by a Yeshua. Joshua took the first group in, and Yeshua, our Messiah, will return in the fall and set up his millennial kingdom and take us with him. Which holy day is celebrated in the millennial kingdom first? Sukkot, the Feast of Tabernacles. What event occurs concerning the Torah occurs during Sukkot? Look at Deuteronomy 31. Moses wrote this law down, gave it to the priests who carried the ark. And Moses commanded them at the end of every 7 years in the year of canceling debts during the Feast of Tabernacles, when all Israel comes to appear before the Lord your God, you shall read this law before them in their hearing. Assemble the people and read it. Therefore, Messiah Yeshua will teach us the Torah during Sukkot. You're not going to get a Torah teaching from me during Sukkot when he comes back. He's going to be your rabbi. He's your rabbi. He's going to teach you. I'll be sitting there just like you because I don't know anything. So Moses' life foreshadows Yeshua's life quite a bit. It's amazing. So I am excited. His life points us to the work of Messiah. It is the Messiah Yeshua who came from heaven, the mountain, and delivered us to us the very words of Adonai, just as Moses did for Am Yisrael. Yeshua has come from heaven to give us the words. So he's like coming down from the mountain too. In Deuteronomy 5:25, the Holy One stated that Israel suggested that Moses act as a mediator by receiving the words and relaying the words to them was a good one. This change in plans was made to draw our attention to the fact that this is the plan Adonai will use when he sends us the Messiah. Can you think of another passage in the whole book of Deuteronomy? You probably know this one related to all this. Deuteronomy 18, verses 15 through 19. The Lord your God will raise up for you a prophet like me from your own brothers. You must listen to him. For this is what you asked of the Lord your God at Horeb on the day of the assembly when you said, let us not hear the voice of the Lord your God nor see this great fire anymore or we will die. The Lord said to me, when they say is good, I will raise up for them a prophet from among your brothers. I will put my words in his mouth, and he will tell them everything I command him. If anyone does not listen to those words the prophet speaks in my name, I myself will call him to account. Pay close attention to the fact that the Holy One states he will yet raise another prophet like Moses. Hallelujah. Who will speak very important words to the people of Israel. These words are so important that whomever does not heed them will have to answer to Adonai. And who is this person raised from among the Israelites to speak the words of eternal consequences? John 5:46 says, if you want to know about me, read Moses, because he wrote about me. So if you want to learn about this guy, you need to read the Torah, because he wrote about me. He is the Torah. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God, and the Word came and dwelt among us. Where? Not in Jerusalem, but at Mount Sinai was the first time he came and dwelt among us. He dwelt among us as the Word, the written Word, on tablets of stone. Yeshua is the Torah. For him to do away with it is to commit suicide. Yeshua does not do that. He is God. Yeshua is the prophet. Truly, Moses' life is a prophecy of the life of Messiah Yeshua. Amen. Thank you.